Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
It's 10:25 a.m. on August 2nd, 1980. Explosives hidden in an unattended suitcase detonate in an air-conditioned waiting room at the Bologna train station, which at the time was full of people. People seeking relief from the heat of the day. It was August, after all. The explosion collapses the roof of the waiting room. It destroys the main building and hit the Ancona Chiasso train, which was waiting on the first platform. The station was full of travelers that Saturday, and the city was utterly unprepared for a major disaster. Many of the passerbys and travelers who were at the train station that day provided first aid to victims and helped rescue people who were buried under the rubble. In all, 85 people were killed and over 200 grievously wounded. And the reason for the attack and who carried it out is something that's been debated to this day. And it may just tie in with last week's episode about Operation Gladio.
Sweeney from Thinking Sideways podcast and filmmaker Vincent Caldoni. This is The Shocking Details.
Hey there. Welcome to another episode of The Shocking Details. I'm Joe, joined as usual by Vincenzo Caldoni.
I was going to do that, but I screwed up. Vincent Caldoni.
I like Vincenzo.
But, Vincenzo. Your son of Vincenzo.
Yeah. Okay. But back to our story here. A big bomb goes off, or a pile of explosives explode, at least. There's still some contention about that, actually. But due to the large number of casualties and a lack of emergency vehicles available to transport the injured to hospitals, the firefighters use buses, private cars, taxis, whatever, to get these people to help. Doctors and hospital staff returned early from vacation to care for the victims. Hospital departments, which were closed for the summer holidays, were reopened to accommodate all these injured people. And there were quite a lot of them, like we said, 200 plus. And then after the attack, large demonstrations were held in the Piazza Maggiore. Is that how that's pronounced?
Maggiore.
Maggiore? Okay, Maggiore. Which was like the central square of Bologna. There was harsh criticism directed at government representatives who showed up for the funerals on August 6th of the victims. That was in the Basilica San Petronio. The only applause was reserved for President Sandro Pertini, who arrived by helicopter in Bologna at 5:30 the day of the massacre, which is good. And he tearfully said to the crowd, quote, "I have no words. We are facing the most criminal enterprise that has ever taken place in Italy," unquote.
And there were these things that were left behind that are still kept today that are symbols of the attack. Mm-hmm. The number 37 bus, which was used to transport victims, is still on display. And the clock, which stopped at 10:25, became these symbols of the massacre. There's also a monument set up at the train station with the names of those killed.
Yeah.
The attack was the worst atrocity in Italy since World War II. The biggest mass casualty. To understand this, we do have to talk about the historical context that was going on. The bombing was terrible enough on its own, but it capped off over a decade of political turmoil and murder that were known as the Years of Lead.
Mm-hmm.
Arguably, only the troubles in Northern Ireland have it beat for just sheer violence.
There's a lot of this stuff going on right here in the States at that time as well, but a lot of unrest. But
oh, yeah. And in other countries, like in France, there was a kind of a version of this. Germany had the Red Army faction and you know different things like that.
Yeah, but the Italians, yeah, they were a little more violent, it seems like. It got a little nastier over there.
Yeah, I was genuinely surprised reading this about just how violent the 1970s were in Italy.
Yeah, I don't know.
I knew there was political strife there, but it really was worse than I thought it had been. The activity, it really began as pretty standard protests, strikes, organizing. This would be around 1968. But soon there was this incident where leftist students that were angered at the government denying Fiat auto workers the right to strike occupied the Fiat factory in 1969, and things turned violent from there.
Yeah. So after this, amid all these peace protests, et cetera, there came a series of violent attacks led by leftist militants. And these included bombings and assassinations. And there was an entirely random execution of a police officer in his car, a really cruel and very random act, really, really began to turn public opinion against the leftists in Italy. And more incidents followed. The militants, for their part, refused to relent. Three more police officers were killed.
It's important to remember there weren't just leftists in this fight.
Oh, yeah.
There were also many different groups, really more than I could track, of neo-fascist organizations who wished to basically revive Mussolini-style fascism in Italy. Mm-hmm. The first police assassination that was carried out in 1972, who did it? It was a neo-fascist group, actually. Mm-hmm. A member of the group confessed in 1986. Leftists responded by attempting to kill a neo-fascist leader. They firebombed his home in the middle of the night, but they only succeeded in burning his children alive.
Nice.
So that was cool. Yeah. Good work, guys.
Yeah, this is kind of a this whole episode should serve as kind of a warning to the people that we probably don't want to go down this road here in the U.S. You know, so you know, just saying, but probably not.
No, I would not want to see political violence like I've been reading about all week. It's really got me bummed out.
Yeah, well, let's talk some more about this violence. So let's see what we got here. Mm-hmm. There was a bomb thrown into a march that killed several people, wounded 45 additional people. And it wasn't the leftists who were at fault entirely.
It was here. These were fascists responding to many of the retaliations, like burning the guy's kids to death.
Yeah.
That were throwing that threw this bomb that was really lucky it didn't kill more people.
Yeah. Let's see what else. What the leftists also assassinated a judge, carried out some more bombings. There was a lot of back and forth. It was a pretty awful time for many Italians because most of them probably weren't all that into politics so much they were ready to like throw bombs, but you know, as it is, it's always the crazies that set the tone for everybody else, right?
Yep, and we got to live with
it. There's a theme here you got to pick up on, which is when the Italian communists carried out an act of terrorism, they would claim it on the day of. They would take credit for it. Almost to the attacks that went unclaimed were later discovered to be acts of neo-fascists or other groups, and I guess this was done in the hopes that these attacks would be attributed to the work of leftist militants and in turn turn the tide of public opinion against the leftists and towards a new and maybe just away from communism, some say would say towards a new fascist cause. But, you know, so these were in a sense almost you could call them false flag attacks, although they weren't carried out by the government, but they were. Yeah.
Right.
But yeah, they're not so not in the Alex Jones sense of it, of course. They were not Alex Jones false right. flag attacks. But it seems to have been a fascist strategy in Italy, especially in the north across the 70s.
Which really
leads us
times.
Up to 1980 in our train station bombing. That was the single largest mass casualty, as we said earlier, since World War II, and it really shocked the public. I think maybe this helped to sort of catalyze public opinion against all the political violence that had been happening. You think?
There did seem to be a pretty marked downturn in this sort of left right communist versus fascist violence.
Yeah,
shortly after this.
Yeah, it did. But
it was just so random. I mean, most of these people were trying to go on vacation. It just seems so.
You know, and not to generate any spoilers here, so spoiler alert, but it was so random it left people wondering if maybe it was an accident. Maybe people were transporting explosives for possible terrorist bombings elsewhere. They just happened to go off at the train station.
I think that's a possibility.
It actually is. It actually could be. But we'll talk about that a little more in the theories, I suppose.
We will. So let's talk about the investigation.
There was more than one, I think.
Oh, there are still investigations.
Yeah.
I have total brain drain from researching this. It about cooked my eyeballs and my skull trying to figure out all the different investigations, who led them, what their results were, what their biases were, because that's another thing that you have to take into account.
Yeah, these are not necessarily nonpartisan, as we see even here in America.
Yeah, I think so. And I think that is really unfortunate, because I think that in the early days, we'll get into it. In the early days, I think they could have caught these guys.
Probably.
And I think that there was some subterfuge and some incompetence, and then a lot of, like you said, score settling. That screwed up the investigation, and we may never totally know what happened. And then more than that, why?
Yeah, there's been some accusations of cover-up, too, and some obfuscation by members of people high up in Italian intelligence, so.
That's all but an established fact. Let's get into it. The government, which was led by Christian Democrat Prime Minister Francesco Cossiga, first assumed the accident was the explosion from an old boiler in the station's basement.
Mm-hmm. I'll buy that.
Well, that's what they thought, because it didn't. It was a lot more powerful than most of the bombings that have gone on across the 1970s. And it wasn't like they were targeting judge they didn't like, or going after the leader of an organization, or the police, or the army. It was just a train station full of random civilians.
Yeah,
it felt so random that they at first thought it was an accident.
I know, despite the other terrorism going on. But then they noticed, I guess, all that chemical residue. Right.
Yeah. They figured out pretty quickly. I think even before they noticed like chemical residue, they were able to figure out this was a bomb blast. So the bomb was later to be found to be composed of 23 kilograms of explosives, 5 kilograms of TNT, and composition B, which I needed to look up what that is. I forgot what. Do you know what composition B is?
No, I don't. It sounds deadly, whatever it is.
I don't either. And then 18 kilograms of T4, which is nitroglycerin produced for civil use. So that's kind of like what you'd be like clearing land with.
Yeah.
That's a pretty substantial bomb right
now
there.
That again, sort of leads me to wonder if maybe this was indeed an accident. Maybe this was something being transported for murder and mayhem somewhere else. And, or maybe actually even transported for legitimate use. And, they wound up just, it was just in somebody's, it was checked as luggage, and it was being manhandled by the guys who handled the luggage for the train. And they're and they're flinging around a box with a bunch of nitroglycerin in it.
the only thing I would push back against that theory, it still could have been an accident. It could not have been intended to go off. But you can see, if you find pictures that were published in 1980, you can see the blast is in the dead middle of that waiting room.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Reports from survivors say that the thing had been left unattended. It was just sitting there. What does that mean? Does that mean it was on a timer, as has been alleged? Possibly not. But then you would have to wonder why somebody transporting a very big bomb would set it down in the train station and presumably walk away from it, because none of the people who were killed were found to have had a part in the bombing.
Yeah, it doesn't really make sense, I guess, to just leave your valuable explosives just sitting there unattended. So it probably was a time bomb. But
I had actually, when I first heard about this, thought that it had actually been on the train itself, and I was kind of exploring it from that angle. But once I got into the photographic evidence, it's really clear that it was deep inside the station when it went off. It was not.
The thing I wonder about is, this is an unattended parcel or piece of luggage. Now, how big would 23 kilos of explosives be? I mean, that seems like it'd be a fairly big suitcase.
Not necessarily. I mean, 23 kilos is a little over 50 pounds. Yeah. That stuff's pretty dense. I don't really know. Like, I haven't handled T4, but if it's like other explosives, they're pretty heavy. Mm-hmm. Okay. So I think it would fit in a standard suitcase.
Okay. Yeah. And a really strong guy to haul it. So, okay. We're looking for a big muscular guy. All right. That narrows it down.
Yeah, totally. So shortly after the bombing, this is where things start to get weird, right? I mean, I think actually up till now, it's a pretty standard act of terror. But this is where things really start to get complicated. So strap in. Shortly after the bombing, the National Press Agency received a call from an individual claiming to represent the fascist group, the NAR, and claiming responsibility for the bomb. Mm. It later proved to be fake. But when they figured out who had called in, the call had originated from the Florence office of SIMSI, which is the Italian Military Secret Service. They're kind of like the CIA of it. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So,
why were they trying to hang this on this right-wing group?
Well,
no one really knows.
That is interesting. stirring the pot, just having a little fun. It could have been battle space preparation. Actually, one of the things you do is, let's say, you know, it actually was, say, in this particular group, the NAR. But you phone in this call, and then everybody's off to the races, and then no evidence turns up. The whole thing is discredited. So, you know, it's hard to go back and accuse them again, even if they were the perps. I mean, I don't know. Or it could have been, you know, somebody who really hated the NAR and just wanted to, you know, point a finger at them and see them get, like, you know, see all their doors get kicked in and all of them get arrested. Because, you know, these guys would know who a lot of the members of this group are, right? So maybe that was it. I don't know.
Hard to say. It is weird. And what it also says is that the SISMI, the military intelligence, has their fingers in this investigation. They're already trying to put a finger on the scale.
Yeah, they're already trying to maybe send it off in the wrong direction, possibly. But yeah, they never found out. Actually, they found out it came from that office. They never found out the actual individual who made the call, did they?
No, they've had people. People have been accused, but I don't know how credibly.
Another
connection. Yeah. Maybe. Yeah, right. Or somebody just got in there and made a phone call to make it look like it. You can come with all these different things. I wish I knew more about this phone call and, like, what was said. And
it could have been one of those things, like Tom Cruise, you know, breaks into the building, gets into the basement and clips a little thing into the phone exchange there and makes a phone call from there and then sneaks out again. Could have been something like that.
Yeah, it could be.
I don't know.
So a Lebanese connection was claimed in September of 1980. Now this involves, oh man, this is so complicated. I hurt my head trying to get to this one. Afata phalangists, the Italian radicals, and Swiss journalists who had ties to the Italian intelligence community, who supplied investigators with fake notes, memos, and reports.
This is weird, though. I mean, so Fatah and the phalangists from Lebanon, phalangists were Christians and fascists, by the way, themselves. So that, as far as I knew, they never really liked each other. Kind of interesting to think they were collaborating on a little terror attack here.
Yeah, it's never been fleshed out well. And then we had, so this is often thought to be somebody trying to kick up dust and confuse at least the media. So what's happening is someone's going around supplying people with fake notes to make it look like there's this wide ranging connection between journalists in Switzerland and Italian leftists working with Christian separatists in Lebanon and Al Fatah, which is a Muslim organization. That's a lot of cooks in the kitchen. Yeah. But we get to the next really weird thing that some people thought was related, but apparently it's not.
Yeah.
A KGB connection was concocted by an intelligence head named General Giuseppe Santovito. Now, Giuseppe Santovito is a extremely controversial figure in this time in Italy's history. He was a member of a group called P2.
Yeah.
And
I know those guys.
Yeah, we'll talk about P2. Yeah. But yeah, so Santovito, some people think was behind that original phone call too.
Could have been.
He's been accused of that.
Just real quick to just so you know what P2 is. P2 is short for Propaganda Do or Propaganda 2, which is supposedly a sort of not quite Illuminati level, but a secret organization based on a Masonic lodge called Propaganda Do. And it permeates all levels of the Italian establishment, you know, government, military, everything. This P2 was founded as a Masonic lodge in 1877. And was banned, as all the Masons were banned by Mussolini. And then after World War II, they were revived. But eventually, apparently, they had their credentials jerked by the Masonic leadership at some point, like in the mid-70s, I believe. They've become – P2 is very anti-communist. They're not fascist as far as I know. They're just they're just conservative and anti-communist, and supposedly, you know, like over 1,000 Italians, and we're talking high-level Italians, are members of this organization. There was a big investigation in the 80s about this. But again, once again, all the crazy conspiracy theories start kicking in. I mean, it could have been this just a bunch of businessmen and politicians who were basically networking, you know, rather than this massive conspiracy to control all of Italy, you know, but by this private shadowy group.
Right.
I mean, I don't know. This thing is, P2 has actually been on my list of mysteries for a long time. And every time I see it there and I think about it a little bit and I just think, wow, that's fascinating. But God, I'm not going to tackle that one. I don't know. I can't untangle that mess. I just don't know.
It is. It's so.
It's like, I just don't know.
You get into that territory where you're putting yarn on the bulletin board, you know, it's that weird. And this is kind of like that too.
Yeah, so. It is. The Italians, I don't know, man, it's a complicated place over there, you know?
It is. Yeah. It is. So this also now brings us to General Pietro Musumeci, who is also a member of P2, yeah, and another general named Belmonte, who was the head of the SIMSI. Am I saying SISMI? Yeah, this is me. The Italian secret military intelligence. They had a sergeant put a suitcase full. Yeah. This is a regular police sergeant put a suitcase full of very similar explosives on a train to Bologna.
Mm-hmm. This was indeed a kind of false flag operation, though, right?
This is crazy. So these guys put this bomb, I guess, on a train, and they put in personal items belonging to two right-wing extremists, a Frenchman and a German. I mean, they could have hurt somebody doing this. I don't know if the bomb actually could have gone off or not.
I assume they used real explosives, but had it set up so it wasn't going to go off. But
I hope so. But that's still pretty dangerous. And so they're trying to pin this on a different group of now foreign right-wing extremists. Yeah. Remember that this is not a left versus right thing. These two generals are deeply involved in the Italian right. So I don't know what I mean? It's not necessarily that they have a political axe to grind. I guess they do, but it's this. Now we have right wingers trying to stage something to blame other right wingers.
Well, it's hard to say. I mean, these two right wing extremists that they tried to frame might have been fascists, and not everybody knows this, but fascism is actually a collectivist left wing ideology. And so maybe it was P2, as I said earlier, is a more conservative organization, whereas fascism is kind of Marxism, but it rejects internationalism and it rejects nationalization of the means of production. So
they could have had an ideological beef with each other.
They could have had an ideological beef with these guys. And same with...
I think that is possible, but weird.
So, so anyway, there was some score settling going on.
I don't
think
that's proven, though. Yeah. But yeah, it's a possibility. But let's talk about what the other crazy stuff that Musumeci did. Musumeci, this general, produced a phony dossier entitled Terror on Trains.
Did he plant that along with the other documents and the bomb on the train, or is this a totally separate thing?
I think this is totally separate, and I believe it came after it. But basically, he was charged with trying to falsify evidence to incriminate a man named Roberto Fiore and also Gabriele Adenolfi, who were leaders of a far-right group called Terza Posizione that had fled to London. Yeah. They were not living in Italy. Both of these two leaders of Terza Posizione said that Musumeci was trying to divert attention from P2, who apparently they felt was behind it.
Yeah, or more likely Musumeci was actually just settling political scores, and maybe he honestly thought that these guys were, if not behind the bombing, still were jerks, and he wanted to see them put away anyway on just general principles. Hey, why not?
I guess. Yeah. Musumeci and Belmonte were convicted of obstructing the investigation, so they went to jail. But it doesn't answer the question, why were they doing this? Why were they trying to hinder the investigation?
Well, there's a lot of possibilities here. One is, a really overarching conspiracy, or as I said before, some score settling. People opportunistically stepping in and just thinking, hey, this would be a great time for me to try to get these guys over here arrested and executed for this atrocity. Even though I'm not sure that they did and I have no evidence, I'll try to, frame some up because I really despise them and everything they stand for. So, it could have been some sort of massive cover up. Or it could, it could just be a lot of score settling and opportunism going on. Mm-hmm. I don't know. Don't know.
Right. I don't know either. I think it's pretty obvious that there was a lot going on behind the scenes with these shadowy organizations and the government intelligence agencies and stuff like that.
Yeah.
But I want to take a quick break to talk about some cool sponsors.
Yeah. Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
And I hope you enjoyed those fine products. You probably already ordered them. Good for you. All right, let's back to our story here. So, of course, as you can imagine, after the investigation came prosecutions, right? Yeah, of course. So some other investigations attributed the bombing to the NAR. We mentioned that earlier. That's Armed Revolutionary Nuclei, which is reportedly a neo-fascist terrorist organization.
They are.
Yeah, there was a long, very controversial court case that began after the bombing. Francesco Mambro and Valerio Fioravante were sentenced to life in prison. Okay. And you know those names, of course, right? Yeah. Anyway.
I know them because they're very intimately associated with this case. And the case against them, I'll just say, is pretty good. They were known to have carried out other bombings. They were known to have explosives. They also had criminal backgrounds. They seemed to be in pretty good with a lot of different criminal gangs as well.
Yeah, so they probably deserve to be locked up on general principles. So, hey, what's not to like, right?
Yeah, no, but that's where it's – well, that's kind of the issue is that they look really good for the crime, but they did not plead guilty to it. And why would you do something like that and not claim responsibility for it?
Well, yeah, I know.
I don't know. So
what else we got here? So the Supreme Court upheld the conviction of another guy, an NAR member with close ties with Teresa Posizione that we talked about. This was as late as – this was in April 2007, so pretty recently.
This is going on today.
Yeah, it keeps going on, yeah. And so this guy is Luigi
Chiavardini.
Chiavardini? Okay. Chiavardini. So, yeah, he got a 30-year prison sentence for his role in the attack. So he'd been arrested after the armed robbery of the Banco Unicredito di Roma. This was in September 2005. So he was also charged with the assassinations of Francesco Evangelista, who I've never heard of. That was in May 1980. And Judge Mario Amato in June 1980.
Yeah, so basically –
part of the Years of Lead stuff.
You're coming right to the end of the Years of Lead. So he assassinated a leftist and a judge who had put neo-fascist foot soldiers or whatever in prison.
Yeah. So he got 30 years for his role in the bombing. Did he get extra for the assassinations?
I imagine. I actually don't know. I didn't write it down.
I think that would rate a long spell in prison, but I don't
know. I'm gonna say he's probably going away for a long, long time.
Probably still in
stir. And he can't be a young man. He's got to be an old guy.
I imagine so. Yeah. Let's see. So what else happened here?
Well, let's get back to 1980.
Yeah. August 1980.
So this right after the bombing. The prosecutor in Bologna issued 28 arrest warrants for far-right militants. All of them came from NAR, that's the Armed Revolutionary Nuclei or whatever, and Teresa Posizione. Among those arrested were Massimo Morsello, who is a really horrible guy. He was the future founder of the neo-fascist organization Forza Nova. And then this also includes Francesco Mambro, Aldo Seminari, and some other men. They were interrogated. They were brought to Rome to be interrogated in Ferrara. As well as to Parma and other places like that, that kind of separated them out. But they were all released from prison in 1981.
That's a pretty short sentence.
Yeah. One of them, Aldo Seminari, was murdered by the Camorra a year later. Most of these guys seem to have... Should we talk about what the Camorra is?
Yeah, let's talk about Camorra.
Yeah, so the Camorra is an Italian gang, but it's not the mafia. You would not confuse these guys with the mafia. They are much more like... street gangs you would see around the U.S. You might compare them to maybe something like MS-13. Their organization is pretty loose. It doesn't have the kind of familiar ties, and they are responsible for quite a bit more crime in big sections, particularly the mainland of Italy, than the mafia is. They're some pretty dangerous guys. They traffic in drugs. They traffic in smuggled goods. They run protection rackets. They're awful. They're just the worst.
They sound like that. Kind of worse than the mafia, because at least the mafia respects the ground rules, right?
Yeah, these guys don't really have that. There's no men of honor code kind of thing like the mafia at least claims it has. Yeah. These guys are just violent thugs, and they're fine with that.
And so we came some more trials here. So the first trial for the bombing was in Bologna in March 87. So, God, 7 years almost. So six men were charged with murder. And then five of those six, plus six more, 11 total, were charged with forming an armed gang. So I guess that's kind of the equivalent of conspiracy, I suppose.
I think so.
Yeah. And then 11 others were charged with subversive association, which is kind of like what we just said, but, you know, a little less, not so much conspiracy, but just hanging out with people that you might want to conspiracize with.
Yeah.
I guess subversive association.
So. You got me.
That's kind of a shaky sounding charge, you ask me. But hey, you know, it's Italy. They can have the laws that they want, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And then there's some others that were charged with defamation.
And these were the guys within the government. So this is like Bamanti, Musumeci, and Pazienza.
Yeah, the guys like for example, planted the bomb, orchestrated the planting of the fake bomb on the train.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and stuff like that. Yeah. Yeah. And so I don't know. I think instead of defamation, I would have charged them with planting a fake bomb on a train or something like that. But oh, well. Yeah,
well, that's the thing is I don't think the bomb was all that fake. I don't know that. Hopefully it didn't have like a timer on it ready to go off. But they brought real explosives onto that train.
Oh, no, they did. It was like they probably what they probably did is just had it all just like a real bomb with a timer and everything, but just deliberately left some connection unconnected.
Right. Yeah.
You know, and
that's still dangerous.
Yeah, I mean, you can still see how something could go wrong. Mm-hmm. Explosives are not to be trifled with.
So this brings us to July of 1988, when Facchini, Fioravanti, Mambro, and Piaciuco. Man, I thought I could do it.
Piaciuco. Vincenzo, you're the Italian here.
I know, That's a tough one. That's a tough one.
So I'm not even going to try.
Anyway, so these are the four men who they really suspect, including Mambro and Fioravanti. They're kind of the ones to watch for. They were sentenced to life imprisonment for murder.
Yeah.
They were kind of thought to be the ringleaders of this. They had the connection to the different right-wing groups, as well as to the Camorra. It is suspected that possibly Camorra criminals helped supply them with the bomb-making materials. I have, honestly, I hate saying this because I really think these guys did do it, but I don't know why. I don't totally know how, because the court kind of fumbled. They didn't build the greatest case against them.
Yeah, maybe they didn't have a great case to start with.
I don't think they really did. I don't believe the judges were able to place Mambro and Fioravanti in the train station. It's pretty clear they had bomb making supplies and the kind of bomb making supplies that you would build a bomb like this out of. But at least in the little recaps that I read in English, they didn't seem like they were making a case that would do all that well. And don't get me wrong, these guys are horrible human beings. And I do think they might do something like this. They just didn't build a great case.
Yeah, but Ben, and that showed up on appeal not long after that, about in 1990 on appeal, the charges were basically thrown out. They were acquitted, correct? Yeah, and so by 1992, all these conspirators were basically out of jail.
Yeah.
But in Italy, they don't have our double jeopardy laws. No. Like they don't.
No,
have that.
They'll just keep trying you till they get what they want. It is insane.
So they were not home free.
They were not. So they began
even after
a new
basically
trial.
Being tried twice. They were still not home free. Yeah.
So they began a new trial in October of 1993, and on May 16th, 1994, Fioravanti, Mambro, and Piaciuco were sentenced to life imprisonment. Others were convicted of lesser crimes. And in 2000, this is all the way up to 2000, Massimo Carminati, who was a member of the NAR, and another guy, he's basically just considered a far-right sympathizer. And then this guy, Federico Manucci Benincasa, don't worry about his name, he doesn't come back up much more, but he was a member of the Italian Secret Service. Carminati, Bongiovanni, and Benincasa all apparently work together to obstruct justice. This includes a member of the Italian Secret Service, the basically their version of the CIA.
Mm-hmm.
So that's pretty dark. That's pretty scary that there was people within their government, you know, trying to work to make it so that nobody really knew what happened in this.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Which I think people, you know, some of those people, those 85 people, their families deserve to know why their relatives died.
Yeah. And again, what were these people up to? Were they truly trying to make it impossible to get a resolution? Or like I said earlier, were they just trying to, you know, opportunistically carry out their own agendas and taking advantage of the situation? I do not know. But that seems reasonable. Obstruction of justice, that seems like a reasonable charge. Mm-hmm. So, like, see, up until 2003, all these convictions were being upheld, but others were being overturned. A lot of them were tossed out for lack of evidence.
Yeah.
So, let's see, where does that leave us now?
Well, the case against the NAR members seems shaky, but it is the best documented. I mean, why on earth would, but then it leaves you with so many other questions, like why on earth would the members of the Italian military intelligence actively try to hinder the investigation?
Mm-hmm.
While many have credibly alleged that there were a lot of fascist sympathies within that military organization. So then they go on to frame other members of the militant Italian right, the pro-fascist segment. Why would, wouldn't they go after the commies? Wouldn't that make more sense?
Well, again, you know, like, yeah, I would not expect actual fascists in, like, say, propaganda too, to actually have much sympathy for one another.
I guess not. Yeah.
You know, I wouldn't, but yeah. But yeah, I know if this is making sense to you. I don't know. Does it make sense to you?
No, it doesn't.
It's hard to make any sense of this. Again, that's why I stayed away from propaganda too and the Bologna bombing and everything like that for a long time. And I admire your courage for trying to take this on.
Yeah, it was really hard. I thought this was going to be a fun follow-up to last week's episode, and I kind of got my hair blown back by this one. It was big.
Better you than me.
The MI6, I'm going to tease this. They had their own theories, and that's where things get pretty dark. But we're going to get to the MI6 in just a minute.
MI6 did get a little bit involved in this, yes.
Yep. Well, let's talk about some alternate theories.
Well, yeah, there are. Yeah. Let's see. What do we got here? Yeah, so in 2006, during sessions of the Parliamentary Commission to establish to probe terrorism in Italy and the failure to identify those responsible for the train station massacre. And there was also a commission investigating the Mitrokhin dossier, which you've all heard of, right?
That was the KGB evidence that was allegedly forged.
Mm-hmm, yeah, and just Italian intelligence. So new information emerged during this in these parliamentary commissions about international terrorist networks and Italian intelligence in the former Soviet bloc and Arab countries such as Syria, Lebanon, Libya, Yemen, Iraq. So information came out about revelations, I guess, or at least accusations about secret agreements with the Palestinian leadership tied to arms trafficking between the PFLP, that's the Popular Front for the Liberation of Palestine, and Italy. That's long been charged. Actually, we even talked about that a little bit in my old podcast.
Really? Okay.
Yeah. And apparently there was a revelation that a warning to the Italian anti-terrorist secret service 3 weeks before the massacre was discovered. So somebody actually tipped off the government 3 weeks before the bombing.
And they did nothing.
The evidence of this didn't even come out for decades.
Yeah.
It was like 2006 before this revelation.
26 years after the bombing.
Yeah. Long time.
So that's pretty bad.
Yeah. And it turns out, too, there was another revelation that a man named Thomas Kram, or is it Krom?
Krom.
Yeah, Krom, I think. Okay. But he was a member of a German terrorist group, which was linked to Carlos the Jackal. And also the Palestinians. It turns out he was in Bologna on the day of the massacre. Now, that's quite a coincidence, don't you think?
That is a coincidence.
But again, that didn't pop up for 26 years, unfortunately.
Yeah.
Would have been nice to know, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
In 2005, Carlos the Jackal said that the Mitrokhin Commission attempts to falsify history. They were the CIA and the Mossad to hit Bologna. So basically he's saying that CIA and the Mossad.
So it sounds like like English was not Carlos's first language, right?
I don't think sanity was Carlos's first language, but yeah.
Yeah.
Basically, he's saying the CIA and the Mossad lit off the bomb to punish Italy for its relationship with the PLO. But Carlos, I just want to say, he says all kinds of crazy stuff. So even though he is very intimate with this world and this time period of terrorism and blowing things up, I would take everything he says with a couple of grains of salt.
Yeah. Well, the thing about it is this is actually kind of an attractive theory because the Italians played footsie with the Palestinians for a long time. They basically had an agreement with them that if you want to, like, you know, use us for safe haven or do whatever, we'll turn a blind eye as long as you don't bomb us, you know, go off and bomb the other people. But, you know, we won't interfere, but as long as you leave us alone. So maybe this was an attempt to make it look like a PLO group was messing around with explosives, transporting them from safe house to somewhere else. And they just went off accidentally. maybe that's what this was all about. Maybe they tried to make it look like that.
I mean,
I don't know.
Yeah. I think that's a really interesting way to look at it. It's a really smart theory. The issue that I have with it is that they didn't do the other half of it.
They didn't do enough to really, you know, point the finger of blame at the Palestinians. Yeah,
right, exactly.
And I would think, I don't know about the CIA, but I think the Mossad would have been they probably would have been able to do that and do it well. Yeah. It didn't happen in this case. Yeah.
Yeah, it doesn't even seem to have attempted to have happened.
Yeah.
So after the 2006 arrest of a former Argentine AAA member, this is another one of those crazy groups out there, Rodolfo Almirón, Spanish lawyer, José Ángel Pérez Nievas, declared that it was probable that Almirón participated along with Stefano Della Chiaia and Augusto Cauchi in the 1980 bombing at the train station.
So okay.
I don't know where this lawyer got this, but
I love it though. So we got besides the Palestinians and the KGB and you know, and Italian fascists and everything, we've also got South Americans in on the action now too. Right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Right. Now, this guy, he was very intimate with these guys. He'd represented them in court. So I think he probably knows of what he speaks. But what I did not get from this Spanish lawyer was what the heck he based this on.
Well, there was something happened in 1998. Apparently, there was an accusation because the Supreme Court of Argentina in 1998 refused to allow him to be extradited to Italy. This is Cauchy.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, right?
Right. Yeah. So the Argentines wouldn't.
Yeah.
Yeah, they wouldn't let him. They wouldn't let him go to Italy to stand trial. Unfortunately, this means that I have not been able to find out exactly what evidence the Italians had in this to convict him in the bombing plot. But he does have a lot of relationship to militant groups in Argentina. So he seems like the kind of guy who'd be about this type of thing. But it only makes things more confusing, not less.
Yeah.
In 2007, Massimo Sparti's son said, "My father always lied about the investigation." So,
well, sounds like a lot of people have been doing that. So let's see what else. In 2008, during a BBC interview, the former Italian president, Francesco Cossiga, reaffirmed his belief that the massacre was attributed to the Palestinian resistance groups operating in Italy.
Mm-hmm.
So this kind of mesh with Carlos's theory.
Right.
So rather than some sort of fascist or commie attack, it was the Palestinians who either did it deliberately or just screwed up.
Right.
And this is the former Italian president. He said he actually thought that the two convicted people would be Francesco Mambro and Valerio Fioravanti. He said he believed those guys were innocent.
Yeah.
And it was just a PFLP screw up, or perhaps a deliberate bombing even. Although the PFLP, for their part, has always denied responsibility for this.
Yeah.
But then of course, Thomas Cram comes back up, or excuse me, Cram, in 2011 when the Bologna prosecutor began to investigate him.
Yeah.
And also another German terrorist, Christa Margot Frolich,
mm-hmm.
who both apparently had connections to Carlos the Jackals group.
Yeah.
And again, they were both in Bologna on the day of the attack.
So that's pretty wild. What would they be doing there?
31 years after the bombing, he starts to investigate these two Germans.
Yeah, right? Why didn't they go after this? Yeah, so basically the guy who got up on stage and blamed neo-fascists in 1980 is now saying it was Palestinian-lined German leftists.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know where he gets this from.
He
could know stuff I don't about it, but I'm not able to track down what made him think this.
Yeah, well, maybe he realized that he went off a little half-cocked earlier and some new information came in. I don't know.
Yeah.
Or maybe somebody just bribed him. Who the hell knows? Yeah.
Been out of politics for quite a while. He's a very old man at this point. So.
Well, maybe he knew at the beginning that what he was saying was BS.
I wonder.
They had information that was Palestinians all along. But again, various people in the government couldn't resist the urge to turn this into an opportunity to get rid of some of these people in the opposition they hated so badly. You know, could have been. I mean, but
could have been.
But again, that's just another theory, though, and not worth its weight in anything.
Nope.
As I say, the problem with all these theories is why blow up a whole train station if you're not going to take credit for it?
Right.
Right?
Right. Terrorism isn't just about exploding stuff.
Right.
You're only at the 50-yard line if you don't claim it. You know the whole dance, right? You get up in front of your little flag and a mask and you threaten more awful crap if your demands aren't met. That's how it's supposed to work.
like that Crimson Jihad video in True Lies.
Oh yeah, yeah, exactly.
That was a good one. But yeah, you gotta read your manifesto standing in front of a flag, your Crimson Jihad flag.
Yeah, I mean, that's how this stuff works. So, like, I mean, I guess that maybe, you know, your theory that it went off on accident. It wasn't supposed to go off in the train station. Maybe they're trying to move it around or something. But
yeah, maybe, yeah. Maybe that was a year's supply of bombs right there, you know? Maybe they were actually planning on a whole bunch of bombings. Mm-hmm. And instead, they lost their whole inventory in one fell swoop. I mean, that's embarrassing. Yeah, but let's come back to why we originally brought this whole thing up to begin with, and everybody's favorite conspiracy theory, which is the involvement of our buddies from Operation Gladio. Mm-hmm. Anything that happens in Italy has got to be blamed on Gladio. You know that, right?
I think there's not a terrible case against Gladio in this.
Yeah,
one. I wanted to challenge myself to see if there was a case that I could really believe was tied to Operation Gladio.
Yeah.
After last week's episode, I didn't really succeed, but I do think that the 1980 Bologna train station bombing was about as close as I could get. Mm-hmm. So here's a little context. As you heard at the beginning of last week's episode, two British citizens were killed in the bombing. Mm-hmm. And MI6 was afraid, I think rightfully, that the Italians would botch the investigation into the bombing. So they led their own kind of shadow investigation. While much of this report is still secret, in 1992, Parliament in the UK was shown a report blaming Operation Gladio for the bombing.
Yeah. Of course, that was right at the heart of the Gladio blaming, too. I mean, right in the middle of all that, that was right when all this stuff was coming out about Gladio.
Yeah. I mean, I think from what I can tell from searching around with the Wayback Machine and watching some vintage BBC footage, the Brits were pretty pissed off at Gladio. Mm-hmm. It was a big deal. It was kind of a scandal at the time.
Although they, it should always be noted, they had a big hand in setting up Gladio in all these other countries.
Right. Right.
So, yeah. So, sorry,
they were not. They were not without sin, but there seemed to be a lot of outrage going on in the UK at the time.
Well, once these groups were created, these stay behind groups were created with the best of intentions, in my opinion. Mm-hmm. They did sort of pass under the control of their host governments, and and who could have done all sorts of things with them.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, in Italy, especially. But
so
yeah.
let's take a look at it from the British perspective, from MI6.
Yeah.
It's a fact on record that many of the people known to have been a part of Operation Gladio and other related stay behind organizations that have different names were people with some pretty hard fascist sympathies. Some of these guys were pretty scary and ended up in trouble for other stuff. In Scandinavia, some of the people that they left behind that were part of these leave behind operations had been literal Nazi collaborators in the Second World War. In Italy, known members of Mussolini's party were placed in charge of stay behind operations. So put some people that you might find a little suspect in charge of these Gladio operations. I think that you can see why people would be suspicious of them.
Mm-hmm.
And it was and this is where I think it gets really interesting, is that it was disclosed that some of the time Gladio's funding came directly from the U.S. Embassy in Rome in cash that was handed straight over to people like Francesco and other people associated with neo-fascist groups. In the 1990s, two judges launched inquiries into far-right extremism and NATO/CIA funding. And this concluded that U.S. involvement in right-wing terrorism in Italy was pretty likely, but really nothing ever more than that came out of it, just a statement released.
The thing about it is, and they'd never really given us a straight accounting of the money that was spent by, say, the U.S. or NATO on these groups.
Mm-hmm.
Some of that funding may have been justified way back in the early days of the early 50s when Europe was still struggling to get back on its feet after World War II. So that might have made sense. But, going all the way up into the 70s, the 80s, and 90s, mm-hmm. for us to still be forking over cash to these stay behind groups in Italy when Italy's recovered, then they can pay for it themselves. So that's one of the things I'm wondering about is there were cash transfers, but when were those done? Are we talking about cash transfers that were happening the months before the bombings? Or are we talking about decades before back in the 50s?
Not decades before. These would have been up until the late 70s.
Really?
Yes.
Yeah. Well, and I guess that some of these programs have this problem with the government again. Once they get going, they just never seem to have an expiration date. But there was no reason to be funneling cash to Italian groups, in the 1970s. There just wasn't. You know, just bureaucratic inertia, I suppose, is the reason, I guess.
Bureaucratic inertia. And I think the opinion, and this is, you know, this is its own conspiracy theory, but the opinion was that some aspect of Operation Gladio was committed to standing up right-wing groups to combat European leftism. That the mission sort of creeped and transformed into this thing where we got entangled in Italian politics in a way we probably didn't need to be messing with. And we know this has happened in other places around the globe. And that leads us up to the year 2000.
Yeah. So in that year, so 2000, Italian Parliament released the results of a report that had investigated the actions of so-called right-wing terrorists again. But anyway, the actions of these terrorists in the 1970s and their connections to NATO and Gladio were investigated. This report claimed, this is again the year 2000, parliamentary Italian report, claimed the CIA was given advanced warning by the Italian military intelligence agency that members of Gladio were plotting acts of terrorism, possibly using the U.S. and NATO resources, and presumably the U.S. did nothing, CIA did nothing to prevent the attacks or bring these perps to justice.
Mm-hmm.
Although, again, I find this confusing too, though, because Italian military intelligence has intelligence that members of Gladio are plotting something.
Mm-hmm.
That means that they know something about the people that are doing this. So why are they telling the U.S. and the CIA to do something about it? Why don't they just round up these people and arrest them themselves?
Exactly.
I don't quite understand. This doesn't really make sense. And these are, and this is a claim of a report from the Italian Parliament.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a little bit of a head scratcher to me.
It is a head scratcher. What I think I'm reading, and granted, I didn't sit down. I didn't have time to read the full report, just summaries of it. What I'm getting from it is that there were factions within the Italian intelligence community.
Yeah,
is what this report
is
alleging.
Government overall, too. I mean,
and that for some reason someone was in contact saying that they were informing that they had intelligence. U.S. and NATO backed groups were going to carry out acts of terrorism, and the U.S. was uninterested in that. Apparently, though, so was the Italian government.
Well, yeah, I mean, you could see where, like we've seen earlier in this episode, where right after the bombing, and even people high up in the military and intelligence were making fake phone calls, you know, trying to implicate people they didn't like in the bombing.
So well, you can we see think why they didn't like. We don't know this,
but anyway, so they probably were when they get a phone call saying, "Oh my God, Operation Gladio is doing this," you know, and they just thought, you know, one more
that's possible,
yeah. So one more group of people trying to swat these other people that they don't like.
I'm just trying to learn who set the bomb.
Yeah. this report, though, this is the 2000 Italian Parliament report, was apparently authored and approved exclusively by leftist coalitions in the Italian government, and right-wing politicians actually wouldn't not only refuse to endorse the report, they actually condemned it and called it BS, said it was fabrication.
Yep.
So that might explain some of this thing I was talking about, where this claim that the Italian military intelligence knew Gladio was up to something, but the U.S. wouldn't do anything about it, you know? And yeah,
that could explain that. I don't know. Yeah, you got me. The whole thing is kind of a head scratcher. So that takes us back to the year 2006, year in which the State Department released a communique denying all knowledge of anybody associated with Gladio carrying out acts of terror. But this is kind of huge, because this is the first time that the U.S. ever admitted publicly to ever having any direct involvement with Gladio. In the past, they either denied any knowledge of it or claimed it was NATO shows and they just stayed out of it.
Yeah.
So,
well, actually, they didn't actually acknowledge. All they said was they denied having any knowledge of anybody associated with Gladio carrying out acts of terror.
Yeah, I guess so.
They didn't really admit that they were, you know, in their, you know, calling the shots or anything.
They did not. No,
they
that's
just
true.
Said they just said, "Hey, we don't know anything about this." So
yeah, no, that's more than people had been able to get out of them before. So I guess
Well, and it's hard to say exactly how big their role was too. I mean, in Gladio, again, it's never been pinned down.
It's not. It's really confusing. Even just going over this, like, I'm kind of getting a headache just trying to pull all these different threads together. And honestly, this is where it is. This is where it sits today. There are men in prison for the Bologna train station bombing. Did they do it?
Well, I don't know.
MI6 thinks so. Obviously, the Italian government eventually decided that they think so.
Yeah.
I think they are fairly likely to have been involved with it, but what I don't totally understand is why they did it. Mm-hmm. Was this some sort of like false flag attack that was supposed to coincide with these Germans that were in the city that day? I don't know.
So they knew that Thomas Kram and his partner were in town. So they thought they would just touch off a bomb and frame
that him. Is apparently what members of MI6 have alleged.
Okay.
That they wanted to basically, do something terrible to, and then get it pinned on Krista, what's her name?
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Who were, I mean, themselves not, and they were the kind of people who would light off a bomb in a train station.
Yeah.
So I mean, I see the logic that it does sound like the work of a extremely paranoid mind, MI6.
I could see it, but it's like, you know, I'd like to know exactly what their grievance was against Krom and his buddy, Krista.
That's the thing, is that all these things you can be like, oh, well, okay, so why did the train station bomb go off? It never seems like the right action to accomplish the goal. And, you know, it doesn't, none of the threads ever tie together very perfectly.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, which still leaves the possibility, even though I believe it was deliberately detonated, it's quite possible that it wasn't.
Might have just gone off on accident.
It's like, which is not to say that the people transporting it had good intentions.
No.
But yeah, they might have just been like, you know, trucking their suitcase full of TNT and nitro through the waiting room, trucking it through, and all of a sudden they shook that nitro a little too hard and kerblooey. Off it go.
I mean, and it's just worth noting before we sign off, it's just such a senseless crime, you know, like it really
just
killed a bunch of people and really for no reason.
Yeah.
I mean, maybe I don't know if that would make me feel any better about it. When you blow up a bomb to highlight the plight of the Palestinian people, that's bad enough. But when you just kill a bunch of people and no one even claims responsibility for it, it's just so senseless.
Oh, you know, it could have been the Joker. I'm thinking some people just want to watch the world burn. Yeah.
Have to wonder.
But then on top of that, again, we get like Italian intelligence gets caught trying to throw off the investigation.
Yeah. What are they involved?
Phony leads and stuff. You know, what the hell were they doing?
Yeah.
Were they trying to protect Operation Gladio? I don't know.
Yeah.
But the U.S. is, for example, it's called much of the theorizing surrounding this whole thing is just the product of Soviet propaganda.
That is true.
Which it very likely is. Soviets are masters at this kind of thing, actually. Yeah, I think as far as the any Soviet disinformation, I mean, I don't necessarily think the KGB actually constructed and touched off the bomb, although who knows, maybe. But definitely, I mean, you know, they're a clever bunch as far as creating a little, you know, dossier of misinformation, again, to capitalize on the situation and you know, stir up the pot and create suspicion and dissension in Italian politics. Absolutely. You know, this is the hallmark of the KGB. But
true.
Yeah, they've done the same to us many times. They're doing it to us now. But, you know, they are.
Yeah, sure.
They're good at this stuff. But again, who the hell knows? This is a crazy one. And I wish I could pull out the little clue that solves the mystery.
I don't think so. But you might know out there.
Somebody out there has the answer.
The listeners might know.
Somebody has it. Somebody, yeah.
So write us an email.
This one. Yeah, definitely.
Please.
Yeah.
I really want to know who did this. I'm really mad at them.
Confess. And even if you're just like frigging the Soviets or the Russians and you want to just confuse us, that's okay. You know,
yeah, it's all right.
That's okay. We'll take confusion. Why not? We like getting emails. But speaking of emails, if you want to send us an email, you're going to have to listen, stick around for just a moment to hear the lovely Tess give you our email address. Mm-hmm. Because unfortunately, Vincent and I have both forgotten it. So
we don't email ourselves. No, it's the Shocking Details Podcast at gmail.com, but it just sounds so much better when she says it.
That's really good. Yeah. And also, of course, we just wanted to like remind you, we are also on social media, but Tess will tell you about that.
And find us on social media. We have a really awesome community built around our Twitter and our Facebook.
Yes, we do. Yeah. And last of all, of course, we want to beg you to, if you haven't done it already, to leave us a rating, good rating and a good review.
Yeah,
wherever
please do.
You might download this podcast from or stream it from. Yeah. We want that rating. Yeah. Other than that, I don't know. Yeah.
All right. Well, we'll catch you next week.
That's about it. Unfortunately, we've not succeeded in either exonerating or convicting Gladio of involvement.
Not really.
We have not. I'm kind of on the. I do not know.
All right.
Yeah.
I think we got to call it there. We will catch up with you guys next week. Until then.
Yeah.
Arrivederci.
Arrivederci. Ciao.
The Shocking Details can be found at www.theshockingdetails.com. We're on Twitter at Shocking Details. For discussion of episodes and more, our Facebook group is facebook.com/groups/shockingdetailspodcast/. Or you can email us at theshockingdetailspodcast@gmail.com. And if you like the podcast, please consider giving us a like and a positive review and letting people know about us.
Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.